But first, give us a win for transparency with the General Services Administration. Federal News Radio has been asking GSA for the better part of a decade to open access to the schedules program for non-schedule holders like us, so we can see requests for proposals, requests for information, and contract awards. Federal News Radio's executive editor Jason Miller has been on this soapbox for nearly 10 years and writes about it in his weekly feature, The Reporter's Notebook. He's explaining why GSA Administrator Emily Murphy gives him real hope for the first time. Jason, what is behind this change of heart?
We're not sure what's behind the change of heart. Probably my cajoling, my begging, my pleading time and again. But really, what issue...
Not a dozen tulips every couple weeks.
The issue at hand, Tom, is this. GSA has something to the effect of $35 billion that runs through the schedule program every year. And all of that is behind a firewall. And I'm saying, and I have been saying, I think others agree with me to a broad extent, why can't I see what's behind the firewall? I'm not saying let me bid on that, but like under Fed Biz Ops, the full and open competition, I can go there, I can see what's been placed for RFIs, RFPs, award notices, justifications. I think I should be able to do the same thing for the schedules, and especially as more agencies continue to spend more money behind the schedules program. And listen, Tom, this is not just about the schedules, but that's the first place I started.
But basically, you're talking in terms of read-only privileges.
Correct. I'm not saying I want to bid, but why can't I just see what's going on? But NASA Soup, NIH's and their GWACs, any big contract, DHS Eagle, for instance, is another example. I, as the taxpaying public, I, as a journalist, I, as someone who's just geeked out over acquisition, right? I should be able to see what's going on. And I think other vendors should be able to see what's going on, too. Because if I'm a big vendor or a small vendor and I want to say, do I want to get in on that contract, the next generation of that contract, or want to buy a company to get access to that contract, I should know what I'm getting into. It's almost like you have to pay to get on the contracts and then see what's behind the wall, when I should be able to see what's behind the wall and then decide whether or not to spend the resources.
Well, this is especially ironic when you consider how much effort agencies have been putting into the Data Act compliance and all of these other transparency measures over the year. This is a simple switch they could do that would not harm anything, that would give a lot of transparency.
And that's what I've been saying too, Tom. But what I've heard back is, well, first it's the lawyers that don't want to do it. That's an easy blame. Now it's the other agencies. They're worried that, well, if you see what's behind the firewall, that could compromise something. I'm not sure what, but it's something. So my response has always been, well, what about Fed Biz Ops? They're already doing that. What's the difference? Well, it's different. So there's never been a good answer. And Mary Davey, and you know, bless her heart, Tom, she's put up with me now for the better part of a decade. She's been listening and she's been trying to kind of push this boulder up the hill with me. And I'm not sure I give her all the credit, but between her and Emily Murphy and Alan Thomas over at GSA, the Federal Acquisition Services Commissioner, they seem to be making some progress, finally doing something.
All right. What did they do specifically? What did Ms. Murphy say that gives you this hope?
So Administrator Murphy at the Coalition for Government Procurement Spring Conference last week actually called me out nicely, of course, from her speech, and says, this is, you know, Jason will be very interested in this. She says, listen, if we're trying to attract vendors and customers to our schedules, being clear about what's actually bought is really helpful. So one of the areas GSA is looking into to start in 2019, fiscal year 2019, is a pilot in the agency. So any awards using eBuy, after the fact, we will put the request for proposals up. So once GSA makes an award to vendor X, then then you can see what that they were awarded for. And that would give me as a journalist, or you as a citizen, Tom, access. And she was, listen, it goes back to my principles of transparency and increasing competition. Now, it's just a pilot. It's not going to start for several months. Who knows what really will happen? But hey, Tom, I'll take the little win.
Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller, and we will give you that win and put a leaf of garlands on top of your head here and be the first to log on when they actually do that. Now, Emily Murphy and GSA also announced some big changes around federal payroll processing. What's going on there?
Now, Tom, this has been in works for a little while. They put out RFIs and they put out other requests around modernizing how federal employees get paid. So if you remember back in 2003-2004 time frame, OMB mandated a move to centralized payroll providers. There are four of them.
Shared services.
Shared services, exactly. It's probably the only real example of shared services that have actually worked really well. There are some other examples out there. Dave LeBrec from Treasury will probably call me out on this and tell me that there's been other, the Treasury moved.
202-274.
Exactly. But the point here is that what GSA now is doing is they put out a pre-solicitation notice saying, we are going to modernize how the federal employees get paid, how time and attendance get done, and we want vendors to be ready. And not just vendors, but government agencies who provide these services as well. Tom, this is what GSA says could be a 10 to 13 year contract worth as much as $2.5 billion. Now, the two things they're focused on is payroll and work schedule and leave management systems. This is going to be open to GSA IT Schedule 70 contractors. And what they're expecting is to award one or more blanket purchase agreements. So there's still a lot to be unknown here, but that is a major shift to how the government not only does shared services, but the private sector's role and how employees, most importantly, are going to get paid.
It's also a very efficient way, because if you say $2 billion over even 10 years as a percentage of the payroll, it sounds like a real bargain, too.
It really is. And this is leading the way to where the administration wants to go with shared services more broadly. One of the things that Emily Murphy talked about at the Coalition for Government Procurement's event was the government spends $28.6 billion on administrative services right now. And she says, listen, if you ask federal executives, are they happy with the quality of those services? Most would not be very happy, she says. So before, and this is very key, Tom, before they put together another contract vehicle, before they start another initiative, they really want to understand what are they doing, what do the agencies need, and what's the best end result. She points to, for instance, the Treasury Department's example, another good example of shared services, which is e-invoicing, as another good success story. And that met a need based on a bunch of agencies coming together around a topic. They really want to bring those agencies together to understand what's the outcome they're looking for. And I think payroll is the first step.
Well, good. It's time they got out of the airline food model, expensive and lousy. And Jason, you're also writing about a busy week in cybersecurity. What stood out to you?
There were four things that really popped out, Tom, that we had. The new strategy from Homeland Security Department. You had the Energy Department putting together a critical infrastructure strategy for the energy providers in the private sector. But really what stood out to me was this idea of the National Security Council basically eliminating the White House cyber coordinator position.
That went over like a lead balloon in most quarters.
It did. Now, they're not getting rid of the roles and responsibilities. They're just shifting from a one-person to two-person setup who are National Security Council already directors. And when I started to do some research on this, Tom, because the fourth thing is around the executive order that President Trump signed, the one-year anniversary happened May 11th. So initially when I went down this path of, okay, let's talk about where we are at a year into the executive order, what I got back was a lot of, well, that's all fine and good, and there's a lot of good news, but this cyber coordinator role is really worrisome. And I think that's really what stood out to me. And it also calls into question, what's the status of the federal chief information security officer, the federal CISO? Right now, there's an acting federal CISO, Grant Schneider. He's been acting now for the better part of a year and a half. What's going to come of that position? Especially now, since the White House cyber coordinator role has been kind of split into two different positions, if you will. So there's a lot of questions that came up as I talked to people like Michael Daniel, the former White House cybersecurity coordinator, Trevor Rudolph, who used to work at OMB, and others. They all said this position is so important publicly and internally to the government. So there's a lot of questions out there, Tom.
And it may not be over yet.
It may not be. There's a bill on Capitol Hill talking about making this position permanent, which I'm not sure how the administration will feel about that either.